Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. On this edition, Price Check, the grocery business in South Florida. If we are what we eat, then what does where we buy most of what we eat say about us? One out of seven of us will visit a grocery store sometime today. We might grab a shopping cart and start making the rounds. Now, fewer of us tend to shop on Mondays and Tuesdays, but on an average week, we go more than two times to a grocery store. A group called the Time Use Institute found regardless of when and how often we go shopping, we spend more than a half hour inside a grocery store, roaming the aisles, searching the shelves, on the way to spending more than $500 billion per year as a country in grocery stores. So it's no wonder that with that kind of financial and time commitment, we can grow attached to a grocery store. A store can become our store. Maybe it's the one closest to where we live, or it's on our way home from work. But maybe it's a deeper emotional connection.
Hi, my name is Jared Bystrom, and my grocery store is Whole Foods South Beach. I consider it my grocery store because it's where I met my lovely wife, Ellie. In fact, this month is our 10-year anniversary, wedding anniversary, and we still go and eat at the same exact table that we met at 11 years ago. The only difference now is that when we met there 11 years ago, it was called Wild Oats before it was Whole Foods. Wild Oats, go figure.
Now that change from Wild Oats to Whole Foods is part of the story of the grocery business nationwide and here in South Florida. But Jared's attachment to his grocery store in Miami Beach is really not unique. Maybe the matrimony result is, but not his devotion. Rachel Morello reports.
It's a grocery store. There's no iPhone for sale, no heat tickets. It's almonds, cereal, and cheap wine. The much-coveted two-buck chuck. Trader Joe's had its South Florida debut earlier this month. The opening of its latest store in Pinecrest drew more than 100 people before the doors even opened. Jody McCullough is the store captain.
We are so excited. You know, the first Trader Joe's in Pinecrest in Southern Florida. We're having a huge celebration today. We're so thrilled to be a part of this beautiful community.
Shoppers, fans, were so excited too. Just listen to those who lined up before the doors even opened for the first time early one Friday morning.
I've been waiting forever for Trader Joe's to open in Miami. What's fun is that they have seasonal products, and it's just a different shopping experience than at other supermarkets.
I'm vegan, so I kind of go for their organic vegetables and that sort of things. I mean, they're kind of similar to Whole Foods, but they have some different products, and some of the things are less expensive.
Trader Joe's came with a lot of hype for those inside South Florida's foodie scene. It also opened in a very competitive grocery store market, with two Whole Foods, four Publix, two Targets with groceries, and the Fresh Market, all within 3 miles.
We're another addition to the grocery landscape here in Pinecrest. You know, I think folks that know us, you know, from up north and from California are going to be eager to shop here because they grew up with us.
At the Pinecrest opening, Brenda Braley sported a Hawaiian shirt and a smile so wide that this reporter mistook her for a store employee. Braley is more than just a loyal Trader Joe's customer. In a word, she's a super fan.
I didn't realize how much I had. I looked at my cupboard yesterday and I realized that looks like a half of a Trader Joe's store.
The same quirky private label products lining the aisles at Trader Joe's stores grace the cupboards in Braley's Doral kitchen, as well as her fridge. And her freezer, and her garage. She tends to stockpile items she can't get anywhere else to satisfy even the pickiest members of her household.
My dog biscuits, pumpkin treats. They love these. Oh, do they ever love these? Okay, who's gonna sit? Sit. Okay, quick. They love these. Oh, I have to go to Publix for a lot of things. I can't buy tomatoes and keep them for 6 weeks from Trader Joe's.
She used to drive 2 hours each way to what was before this month the closest Trader Joe's for her, in Naples. She made the trek across the Everglades every few weeks, but no longer.
Curry sauces, the chili, Brussels sprouts, and the wine. So let's have some Trader Joe wine or champagne. And veggies. I'm just Trader Joe junkie, I guess. but these dressings.
Trader Joe's plans another location in Boca Raton by May. After that, it's Delray Beach. For the Sunshine Economy, I'm Rachel Morello.
Well, one of those grocery store brands also expanding, continuing to expand in South Florida, is Whole Foods Market. Juan Nunez is president of the Florida region for Whole Foods Market and joins us here on the Sunshine Economy. Juan, welcome to the program. What kind of expansion plans does Whole Foods have here for South Florida?
Good morning, Tom. Thank you for having us here today, and glad to be here. We have 20 stores in Florida currently, which is our region here. And we have 5 more in development, and we believe Florida has potential for many more stores for Whole Foods markets.
What is it about the Florida market that you see and Whole Foods sees as key for business growth?
Our customer base generally has a good understanding of natural and organic and the value that those products have. And we believe there's a lot of potential in the large metro areas, Miami, Orlando, Tampa, St. Pete, Jacksonville, and many other smaller markets. We just opened our 20th store in Tallahassee that has customers that are advocates and really understand the value of natural and organic foods.
The Tallahassee store, the first Whole Foods in the Panhandle, it opened within 2 days of a Trader Joe's also opening in Tallahassee. Talk to us about the competitive environment here that you're finding in Florida.
The competitive environment is growing. Florida is the fourth most populous state in the country, so it attracts a lot of retailers, and in the grocery industry, that's not any different. And we compete based on our culture and the products and the quality of our products and our value offerings. So most customers now, you know, they have an increased choice of where they can get their groceries, and we offer a great experience, and our higher purpose allows us to really offer more to the communities that we're in.
Nobody wants to compete on price, certainly not in the grocery industry when profit margins can be razor thin, 1%, 2%. So how do you create that value proposition and hold true to it in an increasingly competitive environment on the high end from the Trader Joe's and the Fresh Market, and on the low end as Walmart and Target continue to grab market share?
Well, I once heard said that quality is remembered long after price is forgotten, and our quality is our hallmark, our calling card. We have transparency on all our products. We know where they come from in the sourcing, and there's a lot of value in that. But also, we have our private label line of over 1,000 items. We have over 1,000 items on sale, and we compete on price based on like items that if we have an organic gallon of milk, that will normally be either the best price or equal price in the market. So we compete on price.
That gallon of milk, by the way, is usually placed the furthest away from the store front door to get that shopper in through the door. Juan Nunez is president of the Florida region for Whole Foods Market, joining us here on the Sunshine Economy. You mentioned looking at 5 new stores for South Florida. What kind of competitive assessment do you make before deciding when and more purposely where to open up a new store?
Well, we're very patient on our real estate philosophy, and we look for those sites that are going to offer, the most convenience, the easy in, easy out, and the type of store that we want to build the size. And it's based on what we believe the market is interested in, the communities, what they're interested in, but mostly those shoppers that have an interest in natural and organic and high-quality foods. We look for those markets, and we believe there's great potential still here in Florida for more stores.
Where do you think we will be finding more Whole Food markets here in South Florida over the next several years?
Well, definitely. We're downtown Miami is not too far from these studios. And
how far along is that project? Because that's been a much delayed project downtown just north of the river.
We believe we can have that store open late 2014 or early 2015. Very urban type store, so it's very different from all our other stores in the state. But Miami has great potential. We're going to open in Pompano Beach, Altamont Springs in Orlando, Clearwater. We're looking at other sites around the state. But the metro areas, and now with our expansion into the Panhandle, some of those other smaller cities will also have a potential for Whole Foods markets.
Operating in a very competitive market here statewide in Florida, Juan Nunez, president of the Florida region for Whole Foods Market. Thank you, Juan, for speaking with us. Still to come on the program, how a single store independent grocer survives among the competition.
We just got a jam from California. It's a pluot jam, which is a plum apricot jam, and it's not cheap. It's $12 for a 10-ounce jar.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. The grocery business favors the big. Maybe not supersized jars of mayonnaise or the gross count box of cookies, but rather buying in size, scale. And since Walmart got into the grocery business, it has dominated the industry. Walmart is the biggest retailer in the world. It is the biggest private employer in the United States. And it commands the biggest market share in the grocery business. About 25 cents of every dollar spent at supermarkets is spent at Walmart. And then there's Joanna's Marketplace on South Dixie Highway near Dadeland Mall. Joanna Letterman opened it with her husband, Alan, back in 1992.
We planned to open on August 24th, 1992. We had put up our new awnings, and we all headed for our homes the night before, and we were blown away for 3 weeks, as was our entire client base.
Yeah, after investing in 7 weeks of training for the new staff, stocking the store, and getting everything ready to start a new business, a new grocery store, Joanna's, like the rest of South Florida, met Hurricane Andrew.
There was no electricity, nothing in the freezer. Alan had to go in with the scuba tanks to clean out the freezers. It was quite difficult. So our original concept of client base wasn't here any longer.
But 3 weeks after the storm and in the midst of the devastation that remained, she opened the doors on her 5,000 square foot market, even if the rest of her family may not have exactly been ready yet.
I went to a store in the mall, put up a sign, "We're open," and I walked into the office and said to Alan, John, and Michael, "We're open." He said, "No, we're not ready." I said, "Well, your first customer just walked in. It's Mrs. Kellogg, and she wants a garlic." And
John and Michael are Joanna and Alan's sons. They run the store now. We visited during a lunch hour with both of them, along with John's wife, Kelly, buzzing around the store. John helping at the checkout counter, Michael surveying the shelves and supplies, Kelly talking to the baker and welcoming customers. Now, this makes them the second generation to operate the store. We grab John between customers.
I know it's the busiest time of day for you, but John, give me an idea of, you guys are doing a brisk business here. It's lunchtime, it's busy. How is business?
Business is going strong. Our store has grown every year, and our customers are loyal. They come back, and it's a good time for us.
Talk to us about the good time, because competition seems to be beckoning at almost every doorstep for a small single-store operator, an independent grocer in this kind of market, this kind of environment.
Well, we try to differentiate ourselves with our service and the fact that we make all of our products here in the store. We make our own baked goods. We make our own prepared foods. They can get packaged goods anywhere. That's a commodity. We make what we sell. So.
You don't want to compete on price, do you?
We can't. No, never. Those guys are all of the nation. We're here. We're local. Families here living in the same community. So we give a great product and great service.
You've also been riding the trend of ready-to-eat food, ready-to-eat meals. A number of the bigger chains, Whole Foods, Publix are now offering almost cafeteria styles right next to the packaged goods. How, again, are you able to kind of try to differentiate yourself and continue to serve that clientele that you've had here for 20-plus years?
We pride ourselves on the quality of our product, the ingredients. We have chefs in our kitchen here making small batches daily. Everything that we make is by hand, by us, and it's not a factory. There's no big old machines making this. We watch every piece, and then we give the service on the front end.
Give me an idea of what you're experiencing in terms of your cost of goods, the wholesale side of it. As you go to your suppliers, you're dealing with a lot of raw materials that you come together and bring together for your potato salad or your egg salad or your eclairs, whatever it may be. What are you experiencing in that regard, especially as you're seeing more competitors get into that ready-to-eat meal business?
Cost of good-wise, from our suppliers, prices are always going up. They never go down. We have to combat that with our efficiencies in our kitchen and how we do our business, which to try and keep our prices balanced. But we can never compete with them on their price buying, though we can't buy at that same level.
It is awfully busy here at lunchtime, and lots of things are going on. Where do you see the marketplace over the next couple of years as you've seen the business continue to evolve here?
Well, we're going to continue differentiating ourselves by making better quality products all the time. We make new items all the time, and we keep our classics that people come back for and they know us for. So we've built a loyal clientele base, and so we can continue to see that grow that way.
You know, when you take a look at the supermarkets, 50,000 square feet, 75,000 square feet, they're looking at every square foot for sales. So how do you look at an operation like this that's about 5,000 square feet in terms of your sales and the ability to generate the kind of revenue that you need to compete and remain an ongoing business concern?
We don't have the same overhead that those companies do. At 5,000 square feet, where ownership is on premise every day, we don't have shareholders, we don't have everything else that they have to pay out to. So we want to maintain our quality of product. We think that we get new customers all the time through word of mouth. And once they come in and taste our stuff, they come back.
John, I know you got to get back to the register at lunchtime, so thanks again for talking to us. I appreciate it. A traditional grocery store will have thousands and thousands of items, but an independent single-store operator just can't afford to be all things to all people. As the industry has continued to specialize and splinter off certain categories of shoppers, the deep value buyers over here, the all-natural organic shoppers over there, small markets like Joanna's perhaps blaze the trail, but they're now seeing an ever-increasing competitive marketplace. Michael Letterman is the buyer for Joanna's, meaning he's the one responsible for what customers see on the shelves.
I think that people are looking more for high-end things. I think that as you see Publix buying gourmet items and now Whole Foods coming online, Fresh Market, and now Trader Joe's just opening up, getting mobbed already down the street. So the people that go into the supermarkets are used to seeing gourmet items in the supermarkets. So we've had to be more picky, I guess, here because I don't have a lot of the space that Publix has. So I just really have to be picky, and we buy things on a consensus. We have a weekly manager's meeting where I introduce new products and we taste them, and they can't be too expensive because, you know, price point is important as well.
As you're trying to offer that value and balance the cost of goods, you know, a traditional profit margin in a supermarket could be 2-4%. You know, what kind of business mix are you looking for here?
Well, we work on a different margin, obviously, because we don't, you know, have the foot traffic that a supermarket has, so we have to work on higher margins. But I think based on what we have, we're competitive. There are a few items that you may find here, very few that you may find here that you find at the supermarket. And we may be higher, but people understand that, and they're willing to pay the extra for the convenience. We just got a jam from California. It's a Pluot jam, which is a plum apricot jam, and it's not cheap. It's $12 for a 10-ounce jar. But we sampled it, and we told people about it, and they got excited. And, you know, after they got over the initial sticker shock, they were like, I can't believe I'm buying $12, and I don't tell my husband that I did this kind of stuff, but, you know, they wind up getting it because it's so good.
Yeah. Michael Letterman, half of the second generation running Joanna's Marketplace on South Dixie. Now, I should mention I serve on a nonprofit board with Joanna. Still to come here on the Sunshine Economy on WLRN, are there too many grocery stores?
The reality of the situation is that we just have too much square footage of food retail in this country, especially in the traditional supermarket end of the world.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. It's Price Check, the grocery business in South Florida. A live discussion happening right now on our website at WLRN.org. One of the characteristics of the grocery industry that is really pretty interesting is that while it may be one of the oldest retailing business selling food, it's not immune to the constant evolution of commerce.
The beef people. That's not a name you just pick up. The Winn-Dixie years of experience.
Winn-Dixie's Beef People from the 1970s. The chain got its start in the 1920s in Miami, but by 2005 it was in bankruptcy. Its parent company, now called Southeastern Grocers, has filed paperwork to sell stock to the public, though no date has been set. Jim Hertel is a managing partner with grocery consultancy Willard Bishop.
For such a long time, the grocery industry has been characterized by what we would characterize as the traditional supermarket. That being a 50,000 square foot box that sells fresh foods and packaged foods in the center of the store. what we're seeing right now is a real redefinition. Those traditional supermarkets are kind of stuck in the middle, and they're losing out to upscale fresh food chains like Whole Foods or the Fresh Market. They're also losing out to what I would characterize as extreme value operators, Aldi, Save-A-Lot, and even the dollar stores these days.
Traditional supermarketing has always been a low-margin, high-volume business. In other words, you don't make a lot of money on each individual item, but as long as you sell a lot of them and sell them quickly, you can stay in business. Is that still the model?
That's still the model. Unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of locations where traditional supermarkets had been selling, you know, as much as $1 million a week of foodstuffs, which obviously you can make some money even at a very low margin, on a very low margin basis with that. But what ends up happening now, a lot of those stores have lost 50, 60, 70% of their sales. And at some point, there is just a basic cost that has to be covered. And a lot of folks just aren't able to cover that, not on a week in and week out basis.
Where's that business going? It sounds like it's going to the high end and also going to the value end. Is the middle just getting carved out in the business?
Absolutely. What's happening is that the traditional supermarkets have gone from approximately 90% sales or share of food sales over the last, say, 20 years or so, down to about 45 or 48% by our calculations. And it is disappearing to so many different challengers. Walmart has, with their Supercenter format, is now the country's dominant food retailer and has been for quite some time. But we're seeing smaller and smaller upstart chains that are carving out different ends of the spectrum all over the place.
What is the market that they're recognizing and tapping into that the traditional supermarket stores have either passed over or forgotten or ignored?
What's happened today is that the emerging retailers are focused on much narrower niches. And so they're taking off slice by slice, and the all things to all people just doesn't work anymore. On the top end, the fresh format retailers have identified concerns about food safety. They've identified natural and organics as, and quite frankly, local as real levers to be able to take people who can pay for natural and organic foods, and they've siphoned those off from the traditional retailer. There's another group of consumers who, whether because of the Great Recession or because you know, they just are somewhat less discriminating about what they're purchasing, have gravitated toward limited assortment stores like Aldi or Save-A-Lot, where they can save on store brands, to be sure, but where they can save 35 to 40% like-for-like items. And so the answer is they are fighting a 360-degree war. It's not even a two-front war. And traditional supermarkets just have not been able to keep pace.
Here in South Florida, the traditional supermarket traditionally has been Publix, to a lesser extent, more historically, Winn-Dixie. What does it mean for Publix operations in South Florida as it tries to fend off the higher-end incursion on the part of the Fresh Market and Whole Foods and most recently Trader Joe's and the more bargain-hunting nature of a Super Walmart or a Super Target?
Well, what it really means is they have to develop and define themselves in what we call a shopper value equation, first and foremost. They have to understand who they are and on what basis they are going to compete with everybody that they are competing with in the marketplace. And that's an introspective activity in a way, because what people have to do is to really understand that they can't be all things to all people. They need to be no worse than at parity by their shoppers, but they have to identify something that they're going to stand out on. Now, for some retailers, that can be price. For other retailers, it's on the basis of their fresh offering. I think in Publix's case, it's probably going to be something that's focused on their fresh offering, produce and meat, most importantly. So that's just table stakes. That's the price of poker, if you will. What they have to do from there is they have to get their prices right. And getting their prices right doesn't mean to be the lowest price operator in town. There's no way that somebody with the kind of variety, let's say, that Publix would have could do that. But getting their prices right means that they have to be within reason on almost everything in the store. And they have to understand which are the items that are truly what we call known value items.
How many items in a traditional supermarket store of 50,000 square feet or so?
You know, there's probably typically 45 to 50,000 items.
And you're saying that for a supermarket to compete, they really need to focus on pricing of really just literally a basket full of items, items that folks traditionally come into the grocery store for on a regular basis.
Tom, it would be a big basket, so I would have to say that. But it's about 500 what we would call lines compared to that 45 or 50,000 items, probably all in 2,500 or so. So it's 5%, let's say, of all of the inventory in the store that has a disproportionate impact on price image, and those are the items you need to get priced right.
You mentioned some of the dairy items. What else is in that basket of 2,500 items?
It's really drawn from all across the store, and one of the challenges that food retailers have is to understand across the entire store which are those items. It's not an easy thing to do, but it's worth the time and effort. A pound of ground beef in the meat department would be one of those things. And in almost every category, certainly in almost every category of edible food, there are one or two items that fit the profile.
As you look across the country and into Canada when you're doing some work there, is there anything that strikes you about the market as you understand it in South Florida?
One of the things that's intriguing and maybe operating a little bit under the radar, obviously Canada, United States becoming more ethnically diverse, but I would say that in Florida you all are kind of on the leading edge, certainly with the Hispanic community. And understanding and grappling with kind of the arc of immigration, if you will, immigration into the country, is something that I think a lot of retailers struggle with. And that is to say, when people are immigrating to the United States, first generation, second generation, and tracking that shopper appropriately and serving their needs appropriately as neighborhoods change, that's really tricky to do. And I would say typically most retailers struggle with that.
Jim, recently we have seen investors move into the supermarket space. Winn-Dixie is owned by a private equity firm. We've seen the massive national chain Safeway get some interest in the part of private investors. Do you see this buying of grocery stores and rolling them up continuing? And does that mean closing stores or opening new ones?
Tom, I think it absolutely is a trend that's going to continue. The reality of the situation is that we just have too much square footage of food retail in this country, especially in the traditional supermarket end of the world. So I think what we'll see are smaller operators. Historically, this has been a business that has had market level operators who might have 50 or 100 or 150 stores that they operate. The days of those smaller operators being able to compete head-to-head with the national chains are rapidly disappearing.
Still to come on this edition of the Sunshine Economy on WLRN, we go to one Broward County neighborhood where neighbors think there are not enough choices for fresh food.
But what we're trying to do is get more of the community involved because there aren't any grocery stores like in walking distance, and a lot of the people here don't have cars.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Not all of us are lucky enough to live near a decent grocery store, but thousands of Floridians from Homestead to Riviera Beach live in so-called food deserts. We found one such location in Dania Beach, working with a federally funded initiative involving the Broward Regional Health Planning Council and a public-private partnership designed to grow fresh vegetables in the middle of the neighborhood.
My name is Anthony Oliveri, and I am a community food systems planner. We are standing in a market garden as opposed to a community garden. This grows food for sale, profit for the community, and it's located in Dania Beach. And the technical term is it's located in Census Tract 805 in Broward County. And Census Tract 805 is interesting because it is designated as a official USDA food desert, A food desert is just a term that was developed by the USDA, the CDC also. You know, it's a very common term. It basically means it's a neighborhood, and by neighborhood they mean census tract, that does not have a grocery store or a supermarket within 1 mile or 1/2 mile from the center of that census tract. And it also has a poverty level, at least 40% of the population is below the poverty level. And it showed up in our assessment as an area with higher than county average of diabetes deaths and higher than the county average of unhealthy food per population. But when we did our assessment, we stayed away from the food desert definition because food deserts are somewhat derogatory, and they, you know, they insult the community that you're a desert, especially if the community is already facing challenges such as high rates of disease. It's like you're diseased, you're a desert, and you know, and you're poor. So we did a food environment assessment. So the description of this food environment, it has lower than average healthy food retail, well, healthy, the grocery store square footage per population, while it simultaneously has higher unhealthy retail square footage per population, and unhealthy in this category is convenience stores.
Hmm.
So it has both qualifications. The USDA Food Desert Locator only uses grocery stores. We included convenience stores as unhealthy index. And it also has higher than county average poverty, and it has higher than county average African-American population. And that's important because the African-American population in Broward County is 88% higher than the county rate for long-term diabetes.
My name is Leon Carroll. Dania Beach, Florida is my home. Well, the neighborhood over the years has made a drastic improvement. I was born and raised in this neighborhood, and this was all bush, and it has evolved to what you see now. And in the last 8 or 9 years, it has changed even more. Before the Publix opened, the only thing that was here was Winn-Dixie. And then if you wanted to go to a Publix, you would have to go over to Sheridan either way, east or out west. To get fresh vegetables, they would either go to Publix or Winn-Dixie or to Penn Dutch or go all the way up to Fort Lauderdale to Tater Town. Mm. So to get the type of vegetables that they want, like collards, kale, string beans, what have you. So that's what we're trying to grow here in this garden to supply the neighborhood with the fresh produce that they need. The African-American community, they want collards or kale or mustard greens, sweet potatoes, etc. That type of produce. And a lot of times you go to the store, they didn't have it, or they had it, but the price was so high. So what we're trying to do here at the garden is to have what the neighborhood want, also to introduce them to other types of produce like Swiss chard and rainbow chard, savory cabbage, that type of produce.
This is actually a jalapeno pepper. These get pretty spicy. A lot of people cook these in their greens, like maybe collard greens or cabbage or kale or something like that. We also have the big gem peppers. These are like mild to spicy, and people also can make those in their greens, or you can make pepper sauces with any of them. And these are like the baby orange peppers, the bell peppers. You can put in your salad, or you can just eat it. My name is Rochelle Lawson Norwood. I live in Dania Beach, about maybe 5 minutes from here, which is very convenient. Right now in this neighborhood, we really needed this garden. We will be starting a community garden where people can actually grow their own fruits and vegetables. But what we're trying to do is get more of the community involved because there aren't any grocery stores like in walking distance. And a lot of the people here don't have cars. So, you know, I'm appreciated that we finally have this garden here to, so some people can basically just ride their bike or walk up. And, you know, it's very affordable. It's all organic. So it was trying to teach, you know, people a different way of eating, a different lifestyle than what they're used to, just to make people more healthier. And because we have a lot of corner stores but a lot of the corner stores don't have fruits and vegetables. So I'm trying to make it a mission to kind of talk to the corner stores and try to get some bananas or oranges or something up there, you know, some greens, you know, to get people more healthy or more of a healthy eating. It brings sort of a unity to the community where people usually don't get out and talk amongst each other. So now people do that. So to me, that's rewarding to meet different people and learn different things and customs.
My name is Tina Phillips. I'm with Broward Regional Health Planning Council, and I'm the program director for TOUCH, Transforming Our Community's Health. This is a market garden, and the market garden has been growing since September 29th of 2012. And in our first year, we were able to do hundreds of pounds of produce from everything from Swiss chard to collard greens, amazing heirloom tomatoes, beautiful beets, everything that you can imagine that could come right here in Florida. Well, we believe that seeing the sales figures and then also the number of people who will come to a market on any given weekend, that we've actually increased both the opportunity for the food as well as the consumption of the food, which has been fabulous. We've had discussions about should we change the name of our farmers market to actually the garden market or aisle one, because this is the aisle one for our community's grocery store right here at the Patch.
Still to come on the Sunshine Economy, the shopping science behind grocery shelves and where commerce meets our cabinets.
Most produce sections are now lit theatrically, meaning that that orange is displayed on a black or a dark background, and it is lit like a television studio.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. The store you probably spend the most time in is a grocery store. The Miami Herald's Karen Runlett takes a tour of the science of grocery shopping in her own neighborhood store.
In South Florida, Publix is the market share leader, dominating with close to 250 stores, Winn-Dixie second, and then we have Walmart and Sedano's. While each chain is distinct in terms of pricing and store environment, there are commonalities in how many of them are designed. Paco Underhill told me so.
The modern supermarket is one in which nothing is there by chance.
Underhill is a consultant and an author. He studies the science of how people shop all over the world. Now, my world for supermarket shopping is Miami Shores. Miami Shores is a village in northeast Miami-Dade County. I do plenty of shopping at the one and only Publix within the village limits. Can't walk in there without seeing someone I know, neighbors, children from my daughter's school, friendly faces I know from the park. Without ever visiting the store, Underhill was able to tell me about the design of my hometown supermarket. He explains why I see what I see.
There's a reason why there are flowers or bakeries right up front, which is to get our saliva glands working. We tend to be much less disciplined shoppers when we are salivating.
The store directs me to the right, towards the fruit and vegetables. Publix corporate offices told me that the company remodels stores every 5 years. This particular store, number 794, was remodeled a few months ago. I've noticed a new layout in produce.
Most produce sections are now lit theatrically, meaning that that orange is displayed on a black or a dark background, and it is lit like a television studio, so that the orange pops.
Underhill explains that supermarkets encourage me, us, to shop produce first because it's one of the highest margin categories in the store. Here's the sad part. On average, we throw out 20 to 30% of our produce purchases because we don't eat it quickly enough. I always throw out spinach. I continue.
We move through the store pushing our carts with our left hand and generally putting things in our carts with our right hand, so that most stores are designed with a counterclockwise circulation pattern, putting our dominant right hand closest to the product.
Maybe lefties have an edge, like my husband. We need chicken thighs.
There is a reason why meat is in the back right-hand corner and dairy is in the back left-hand corner, which is to try and pull us as deep in the store as possible, under the basic premise that the longer somebody holds you, the more likely you are to purchase more product.
Of course, there are lots of items to pick up in the aisles. Cheerios, paper towels, yummy brand Hardo bread, salt, ting, almonds. Another customer tips me to a deal on frozen pizza.
Wait, it's buy one, get one free?
Yes.
Any kind?
The organization of each shelf is subject to negotiation between the grocer and the manufacturer,
okay,
so that the most popular and most expensive items tend to be located at eye level.
We need avocados. Okay, I'm done.
Probably the most frustrating part of our grocery experience is standing in line at the register. We in the U.S. trail the world in checkout technology systems.
Then Paco Underhill starts talking about a supermarket in Stockholm called ICA. He says ICA is very high-tech, much more advanced than grocery stores in the U.S. The chain runs promotions that allow shoppers to use their Facebook accounts to get lower prices. For the most part, this basic supermarket design was formulated in the 1930s. With time, it's become more sophisticated. The placement of every product, shelf, display is subject to some form of sale or negotiation. Reporting for the Sunshine Economy from the WLRN Miami Herald Newsroom, I'm Karen Rundlett.
So nothing is left for chance inside the grocery store. So I visited Linda Gassenheimer, our resident expert on all things food here on WLRN, to talk about where our commerce meets our kitchen cabinets.
Good morning, Linda.
You're almost on time.
Almost, I know.
Oh, my God.
I know Miami traffic.
I'm proud of you.
I know the back roads. How are you?
Good to see you.
You look very nice this morning.
Well, come in.
Okay.
To my office here. This is it.
Linda, your office looks a lot like a kitchen.
Here we are, standing in front of your cabinets.
So I'm opening the cabinet
do
now.
Do the honors.
Yeah, here we are. And it's all in shelves. And
it's very well organized, I have to say.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
You've got
Vitamins and crackers, and I think I see a little bit of junk food back there on that top shelf.
You're talking about my husband's potato chips?
Those are your husband's potato chips. Right, sure.
I do dig in once in a while.
Okay, good, good. Then we've got on the second shelf some breakfast items, tea and oatmeal. We've got pastas and rice here on the third shelf, and then some soup.
Some
pull that
goods.
Out there. Yeah,
yeah,
canned goods.
Canned goods.
Yeah, some nuts there. Good, good.
And then the bottom shelf is another shelf.
I see Twizzlers down there, Linda.
And some chocolate.
Okay.
That's also my husband's shelf, right?
So when you look at your cabinets and you prepare your list, what's the strategy so you can be a smart shopper?
Okay. So, you know, supermarkets have gotten so big these days that, you know, they're enormous. And what annoys me really is when I get to the dairy department and I forgot some apples and I have to go 3 miles back to get the apples.
Yeah.
So people laugh at me, but I make my shopping list in order of department.
Mm.
It saves time. I know that all my produce is in one section of my list, my dairy, my meat and all, and so that I can get in and out of the store quickly. A lot of people say to me, I don't like to go shopping. I don't have the time to go shopping. Well, make your shopping experience quick and easy. Mm. And have a list. Because without that list, you know what you're going to do. Impulse. I find that it's much more efficient, it's easier, and it helps me somewhat to avoid those end caps with the very appetizing food on it.
Not always, because I still see those Twizzlers down there. Let's take a look at the...
Excuse me, this is a private conversation.
Okay, noted. Let's take a look at the refrigerator, kind of the other place in the kitchen, obviously, where we see a big interaction of the grocery store and the kitchen. All right, here we go.
Opening the fridge. And
it's
go ahead. Have
stocked.
A look.
It is stocked. You're obviously cooking a lot. You've been experimenting with some new recipes for new book.
I'm writing another book.
You've
so
got
a lot
fully
of food.
Stocked fridge here. Of course, the staples are here. You've got a gallon of milk that's half left. You've got a couple of dozen eggs. I see some jelly in here in the door, salad dressing, mustards, watermelon, those kinds of things.
So be careful if you go to the deli department. I mean, they're in a hurry. There's a lot of people. But if I want a natural turkey breast, I don't want to have a honey roast one. So watch what they're doing. And the other thing is I always ask them to show me the package before they wrap it all up.
Why is that important?
Well, because lots of times, I don't know if it's happened to you, but for me, I come home and it's shredded. I mean, so the slices are shredded. They're not nice. What if I want to make a nice deli platter? Mm-hmm. It's not going to work.
And that's an interesting point, because the grocery business is really built on low margin, high volume. The more people you get through, the more items you get through, the faster you get through, the more money they're going to make, the higher the profit they're going to make. So they want to churn customers out, get them in the store, fill up the baskets, and get them out of the store quickly.
Exactly. But they're not concerned, or it seems like they don't have time to be concerned with, will I return? There are other places I might want to go. And let's face facts. You know, each manager of a department has a number. You know, they work by the numbers,
sure,
as we all know that. Every inch of the supermarket has to count for so many dollars. They want to turn that food out and out and turn it out quickly.
You could be described best as a professional grocery shopper. It's what you do for a living. You get the groceries, and then, of course, you make these wonderful recipes in this kitchen and elsewhere and put them in the books that you've been able to publish. How has service changed?
Well, it's kind of difficult. You know, as we know, the margins are so low, and I found that the service has gone down. Mm. But I will say, recently, in the last year, I find people trying harder in many respects.
To what do you attribute that?
I'm not sure. Hmm. I'm not sure, but I suspect there's a lot more competition going on now, and I think they're realizing that the customer really does need to come first.
Finally, I've got to ask you, Linda, as familiar as you are with grocery stores across South Florida, what's your parking lot strategy?
That is another story. I'll tell you what, I follow the guidelines. When I find a space, I grab it.
Linda Gassenheimer taking us on a tour of where commerce meets her kitchen here on the Sunshine Economy on WLRN for Price Check, the grocery business in South Florida. Food is often called a commodity. While it is, it's also much more. It's commerce. Some even think of the business of selling food as public infrastructure on par with highways, water, and sewer, since we rely on it every day. That is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
It hardly has an appetite and pokes at food too long. And B can barely bother because all the food is wrong. C likes only candy and chocolate by the box. D is just disinterested in anything you've got. But E eats everything. Yeah, E eats everything. E eats everything. Yeah, E eats everything.